On this week's Our Beer Could Be Your Life, we get to talk with Sam Johnson of the band Choke Up. We get to discuss the band roles that all of them kind of occupy and why hugs are just awesome. You know, they're great. And I fucking love Choke Up, so I was very thrilled to get to talk to them. They are one of my favorite Boston bands of all time. High praise. High praise, Joe. How you doing? Happy Friday, Joe.
Happy Friday to you, Oz. This is a premature happy Friday, or a belated happy Friday, as this is for in our timeline a Monday. But Friday vibes hard in your tropical shirt today. I appreciate
Don't break the third wall.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. My apologies.
Also, this is Dennis-less, so like the listeners are just heartbroken.
Oh yeah. I mean, I can neg you pretty hard if that fills the role that we usually have by our third man here.
I would appreciate it.
Yeah, Scott sucks. I'm Dennis.
Grumpity grump grump.
History. Okay. That's a good Dennis impression right there.
Oh yes. He's gonna cut all of that.
Yeah, he's just gonna cut all of it out and insert high praise. High praise for Dennis. Well, we love you, Dennis. I'm sorry we can't have you on this Monday. But yes. Yeah, I you introduced me to Choke Up 2 years ago. And I had such a good time talking to Sam. He's very personable, very much a thoughtful guy who's connecting what he does musically with what we do. And I just thought it was super, super funny, super engaging. And man, Choke Up is an awesome band. The solo record he's got coming out that we talk about is awesome because we got a chance to preview it.
We did. It's much more low key. I said it sounds like, you know, Choke Up meets Justin Townes Earl, which he took as a good compliment. And I love Justin Townes Earl. The sort of more somber Justin Townes Earl than the like honky tonk Justin Townes Earl.
Yeah, that seems fair to me. Yeah, he just really like has a pretty unique artistic voice. And yeah, I guess when I heard it and thought it was like a pandemic project, I was like, fuck this guy. This is a great record. And like, you just spend like a year at home, like, all right, I'm gonna make a great record. Then he, you know, he did let us into the secret that it took him 5 years to make that great record. But you know what? I think that's, it's a great record. So that's what matters. And he's a super nice guy. So I had to prematurely retract my fuck this guy.
Well, that's good. That's good.
I have another retraction or correction to make. Oz, in a previous episode of our podcast here, I started talking about something that the band that I was in at the apex of whatever I could call my quote musical career, the band that was like kind of serious enough where we put records out, we were on a record label briefly, in versions of that band we played hip hop samples and played to those samples. And I think what I said was only the drummer. And I thought this was funny. And well, Chris, the drummer, I would agree that my assessment was fairly harsh. And since I was speaking about myself, I am one to be self-disparaging, but I do recall that maybe those were the most popular parts of our shows. So maybe I had it a little bit backwards. People were maybe not there to hear the songs we wrote. Maybe they were there to hear the hip hop samples, or maybe both. I think we actually were a pretty, pretty decent band, though my ears are like too old to listen to some of that stuff nowadays. We were like in that metalcore vein, you know, yeah. Like very, very much influenced by like Dillinger Escape, Plan, Poison the Well and stuff.
People do like to cling on to the things that they like recognize. So that's probably part of why people remember that part of the show as opposed to some of the other bits.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, actually, like Chris in particular is one of those kind of like musical minds that, you know, he really kind of held it all together and made those songs like coherent in a way that I think most of us were not as able to do. And you know, throwing in that flavor on top of it and like showing off that influence that was not, you know, we were definitely the only band in any of those bills that were doing like fusing those references in that way. So yeah, anyway, apt correction. Those samples were actually pretty great. So sorry, Chris. Excellent. Now excellent. Everyone go listen to These Are Bandcamp. Have fun finding that. One of the most ungoogleable band names of all time.
It's better than exclamation point, or ack, or whatever iteration that they decide they want to call it. So
yeah, I'll take that. These Are is better than Chick Chick Chick. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Absolutely true.
So Joe, are you, I was going to ask you the same thing.
Oh, were you?
Yeah. Great are we minds. Drinking the same thing?
Are we? I'm drinking the Taipei IPA.
Same here.
That's a thanks to Dennis.
Yes.
This is a Palestinian IPA, believe it or not. And I believe Dennis has mentioned them before what he's drinking portion of the pod. And he was kind enough to share a couple bottles with us. And it is like a delightful little like West Coast-ish style IPA.
Yeah, this IPA is straight out of 2009, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but it is just that like big citrus rind, malty, like sort of like a touch of that like hop bitterness in the finish. Like not a touch. There's a good heavy presence of it, but in a nice way. It just reminds me of like, you know, original West Coast IPA stuff.
Yeah, and just like a nice kind of round middle body balancing it out. It's a really nice, well-balanced beer. So I guess well-balanced is probably in comparison to, well, I don't know if well-balanced is right. It's definitely hoppy, but it is certainly more my style than most IPAs that I come across nowadays. So I think it's real tasty. Thanks, Dennis. You can cut this part out too when we say nice things about you. You can just use this in your personal file. Don't do it to your face.
He just like cuts this up and then occasionally just throws it in because we don't listen to the interviews. So just throws in a lot of like, you're great, Dennis. And thanks, Dennis.
What do you mean we don't listen to the interviews? We conduct the interviews, sir.
We conduct them. How often? We never go back and listen to the interviews because we're like, we were there.
Mm-mm. That's not true, sir. Well, it's a little true. Enjoying the spirit. I'm enjoying the kind of throwback. I think, you know, Choke Up has these like kind of interesting, we talk about with Sam, but these throwback vibes to like folk and rockabilly and almost like country kind of throwback in that music that I don't think I recognized until I listened to the solo record. Then I went back, but man, listening to Stormy Blue all weekend after talking to Sam, like what a great record. Complete thought of a record start to finish really brought it home for me. So yeah, it was really special to talk to him about all that.
I think it's nice to like hear what I sort of felt a little bit of the way that, you know, he's got a diversity of sort of styles that kind of, I think the rest of the band really filters into a very cohesive sounding thing. So they can sound like, you know, three different styles on a record, but it still kind of just sounds like a Choke Up record, which, you know, is one of the reasons I think that they're really good, that diversity.
Hey, you know, I want to pitch to you a new segment of our show, which is what tickets did you buy for upcoming concerts and shows?
Well, it's not super exciting for me since I have to buy a house soon and have a baby. So my timeline and wallet are unknown, but I did buy some Jeff Rosenstock tickets.
Ooh,
that is late enough. That is right before Thanksgiving, and that is late enough. And Daniel, I know you're listening to this. You're still going to sneak me into that Rebuilder Choke Up show if I can get out. So I know you're listening. Just be prepared. Nothing like calling out one person listening to a podcast.
Yeah, well, we already did that. I talked to Chris earlier, so it's still, we're narrowcasting as fuck today. Yeah, well, that's good. I bought tickets to see Mannequin Pussy, Angel Dust, and Pink Shift, and the Sinclair this week, which I'm excited. It shows in October. And I think, actually, this podcast is going to be bringing us to Boynton Yards in Somerville a few times this summer as we support our friends at Once as they pop up. So pretty excited about being able to do that. That might be the first live music I get to see. All thanks to doing this with you, my friend, and for the folks listening. So, hey, cool.
Yeah, it's amazing that we get to support local music and hopefully I feel like, you know, we've interviewed some people that, you know, I would have told us that they've never been on a podcast before. And I'm glad that we get to share their voices with people that may not have heard them. Cause, you know, I know you feel the same way. Local music is so important, and I hope we get to interview 100 more local musicians right alongside us getting to interview some really amazing people that are, you know, that have grown bigger than local music. So I hope we never change, Joe. I hope we don't never get too big for our britches.
Our bridges are as big as they're going to get, hopefully. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you, man. This is the penultimate episode of season one of Our Beer Could Be Your Life. So please enjoy our conversation with Sam of Choke Up. I'm sorry, honest. I cut you off.
Oh, it's fine. Well. I was just going to introduce our guest because I feel like Dennis is going to include this ramble. So we are Sam. Welcome to the pod. Sam Johnson, guitar player, singer of the band Choke Up. One of my favorite Boston bands. So I will probably geek out a tiny little bit, but you know, we'll reserve that for later. Welcome to our discussion about beer and whatever the hell else we decide to talk about, which includes,
thank you guys,
you know,
so
pant choices.
Yeah, I'm confirming.
It's an important topic of discussion.
I'm confirming on Discogs, the photo of you, I believe, has you wearing jeans.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's jeans.
Yeah. I think you'll find that all but one of them will feature me in jeans. There was one photo taken of the band where we all got undressed and stood in a shower stall together.
Classic.
And so, yeah, I think we're all in, like, you know, boxers, underwear and nothing else.
You weren't rocking every, like, other denim photo, boxers?
Yeah. Imagine, totally a never nude.
Yeah. I don't know you, but I've never seen you nude. So perhaps you are indeed a never nude.
That could be my deep secret that is going to be unearthed today.
Sounds like it already was.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
So I'm curious how the and one of our, I guess, most introductory questions in the past year has been, you know, how you as an artist have dealt with the last year of you know, limited artistic endeavor. Possibly, or maybe you found ways to do it on your own.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I feel like I have been so impressed with, you know, plenty of friends who play music, who write music, who create art. And I've been so impressed with so many folks who have, you know, taken this time of seclusion and isolation and have been able to find ways to, you know, continue their art or to continue it in different ways based on these restrictions that we've been living with. Me, on the other hand, this has probably been the least productive stretch of time for me ever. I have done very close to nothing. But I mean,
you say that, but you sent me a list, an album you're releasing, aren't you?
Yes, no, that is true. That is true. But that album, I started tracking that album. I actually think it was election day, 2016.
Work in progress.
Quite some time ago. But yeah, no, that's finally going to see the light of day, all thanks to Harley Cox, who is the drummer of Choke Up. it took a long time to track. It took a long time to mix and get mastered and put those final touches on. But then for a while, it was just sitting in a Dropbox folder. And Harley reached out to me and he was like, will you just let me spearhead this, essentially? And so, yeah, it's probably going to be coming out early October, I think, on vinyl, all thanks to Harley.
That's awesome.
So yes, I'm very excited.
You get to claim that as a pandemic project, though, I think, even if it is a 5-year project. I think so.
I wasn't sure if that counted because like I didn't do the bulk of it during the pandemic. Harley did all the heavy lifting.
I mean, I've heard that Harley is basically the driving force to like get Choke Up and you guys to do anything and the other bands he's in.
Like 100%, 100%. I don't know where I would be without Harley. Choke Up wouldn't have gone anywhere or produced anything without Harley. He is 100% the driving force behind the band. He is, we warmly refer to him as the band dad, because he just keeps track of everything. He keeps everyone in line. He's the one who locks down shows. He's the one who's always reaching out about band practices. Choke Up is Harley. That's really, I might write the songs. I might sing, but when it comes down to it, Choke Up, Harley is the heart and soul.
That's, the having that, push and pull of somebody who's ready to, pull the wagon, so to speak, and other sure. people who are ready to get on the wagon and let that person pull. I think that's a good creative dynamic. Usually sounds like it has been for you guys. I mean, you have quite the body of work as Choke Up and now a solo record as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's worked. It's worked amazingly for me. My favorite part about being in a band, my favorite part about making music is just that, making music, writing songs, and playing with my friends. And Harley really allowed me to focus on those things that I am most passionate about. And so while I say that it has worked out amazingly for me, I feel like maybe there were, one or two times where he could have used a little bit more support from me in, logistics and things like that. So shout out to Harley. Thank you, buddy. I love you. And my bad for not helping out as much as I could have.
Can we talk a bit about the record you shared with us? Does it have a name yet? Is it?
Oh yeah. Solo record coming out later in the year. The name of the album is going to be called Along the Dark Edges of Everything. And I will admit that I didn't come up with that.
Is that Harley as well? Is that
you would think, right, with his track record? My wife and I got married few years back. And we had one of our dearest friends pick out some readings for us. His name's Evan, and we just knew that, you know, we didn't know what we wanted to do for readings, but we knew that whatever he chose would be perfect. And that was the case. He chose this one poem by a woman named Mary Oliver called Coming Home. And it was just this really beautiful, really sweet, fitting poem. And that line came at the end of it. It just always stuck out to me. And when I was, you know, finishing up this album, I was like, okay, I need to give it a name. And typically when I'm thinking about naming albums or whatever, I'll go to the source material, I'll go to the lyrics and pull something from there, as a lot of people do. But for this, nothing was really working. I wasn't loving some of the contenders that I had pulled out. And then I thought about this Mary Oliver poem that Evan read at my wedding. And I was like, this is perfect. I'm just gonna use this line and call it a day. So that's what we went with.
And sonically, I think it picks up some elements out of, well, I guess I should say that Oz here introduced me to Choke Up, and I have not had the opportunity to see y'all, though I'm looking forward to this fall. We can talk about that in a little bit. And I was introduced and was like, oh, this is a great punk band. And as I think when I listened to what you sent over to us for your solo record, I was like, I pulled stuff out of Choke Up. I was like, oh, there are elements of this maybe more folk oriented Americana, mm-hmm. Western kind of feel, sure. in Choke Up that I didn't recognize, even in the heavier, louder parts that you really kind of get to explore. Is that something you've been, you know, looking forward to? I guess you've been exploring it for 5 years now as you created it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've kind of always felt this duality. Just sounds so douchey in this context, but you know what I mean? But you know, ever since I started like writing songs, I was always very much divided between, you know, the heavier punk stuff, you know, much more aggressive and angsty, and then more delicate, stripped down, folky, you know, kind of alt country sort of stuff. And so for the longest time, those two parts of me just kind of operated independently of one another. And like the acoustic stuff very much was not the priority. Like when I started playing in Choke Up, like that was all I cared about. But when I would go home and write songs just for fun, just for me, those, you know, sad, folky acoustic songs would always pour out of me. So for as long as I can remember, I've always been playing those two genres of music separately. But kind of more recently, with, you know, as we're getting older, as the band is progressing and kind of like looking to explore a little bit out of our comfort zone, those two musical parts of me have started to more, they've started to become a little bit more holistic, you know, they've started to merge here and there. And I think you can start to see that in some of the later songs that we've done. And for me, it's just been really terrific being able to do that. You know, being able to bring these two huge musical passions, musical inspirations, and just starting to merge them. It's been pretty cool.
I mean, I've definitely seen, for as a fan of your music, like Wildflower that kicked off Black Coffee, like felt like it could have been a quiet song, but like Nathan, your bass player, and Harley like beat the shit out of that song. And like, that's what brings it up. I feel like, what's the second to last song off Stormy Blue? Level Me. Yeah, there we go. Like that song is like nice and like quiet and stuff, but like, I feel like you have totally a rhythm section that probably is just like, we're going to take your quiet song and we're going to make it fit Choke Up. Like, I don't know if that's true or not, but like, that's how I sort of see it.
No. You're absolutely right. Cause now that you say that, I'm reminded that, are you familiar with the song called Woke Up Drunk? It's off of Black Coffee, Bad Habits. We pretty much close every show with it. It's like a big fun sing-along song. And it's like one of our most like upbeat, fast and charging songs. But when I first showed it to the band, it was this like delicate acoustic song in open tuning. And I think I even like, there's like a demo of me where I like finger pick this song, Woke Up Drunk. And so I remember one band practice, I showed it to them and they were like, we're going to turn this into a punk song. And I was just like, you guys are crazy. Like, how can we ever turn this into a punk song? And smash cut to, you know, being one of the punkest songs that we've ever written, and one of my favorites. So after that, I started to trust their instincts a bit more.
It's understandable. Yeah. Speaking of Woke Up Drunk, did it feel really nice to sell out three straight weeks at O'Brien's for those shows? Because saw Woke Up Drunk. You ended at least two of those shows with it.
Yes. Yeah. No, we totally did. That was wild, man. That was so wild. I mean, just what an absolute treat for us. I feel like, you know, I feel like it was just, you know, such a reward for us to be able to do these three separate shows, to be able to dive into our back catalog, you know, songs that we hadn't played in years and years and years. And I will say that it was an absolute nightmare relearning those songs, but just getting to celebrate with so many of our friends. Like, I think at all three of those shows, I knew what, like 95% of the people there. And so it was just so wild. It was super humbling. And it was just like the best way to celebrate 10 years of making music with my best friends and getting to play that music in front of, you know, my other best friends who come out to so many of our shows. So yes, that was an unbelievable experience that I will never forget.
I was just really glad you got Luau to come back together, because that band fucking rules. God, Dennis, dude, you can cut this out. This is an aside. Just Luau coming back is fucking amazing.
Fucking love Luau. Like, hands down, one of my favorite bands from New England. No, fuck that. One of my favorite bands. A phenomenal group of people, phenomenal musicians, phenomenal songwriters. Just, you know, they tick every box for me. I can't sing their praises enough. Just a quality band.
Yeah. Sorry, Joe, I cut you off. Jump
it's
back.
Okay. I was just going to point out that I believe your head is in front of, I don't know if it's the choke up flyer from O'Brien's, and that it is, right? The 3-9. Yeah, there it is.
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
A shirt's over here too, somewhere in this closet of mine. So,
dude, I wanted to get one of those because, you know, I like having at least, I like saving at least one of our shirts from like every run of shirts. I don't have that. I don't have like any of those from the 10 year shows. So I don't know what happened, but I don't have the shirts. I don't have the posters. I messed up, but I guess they went to good homes.
Sure. Harley isn't just hoarding all that shit.
Oh my God. No. If anything, Harley is trying to get it out of his house. he and Nathan really, they're kind of saddled with, you know, being the gatekeepers of the merch for a long time. Just cause we didn't want to keep like everything in the practice space because we shared it with a lot of other bands. And so they would just have to take it home, and story merch at home kind of sucks, especially when you have a small home.
That is very true.
Yeah.
So if Harley is the band dad, what does that make Nathan? I'm just like drunk uncle.
I'm going to spit out my beer.
For everyone who doesn't know, I feel like 3/4 of the time I see Choke Up, he takes off every article of clothing and then just blocks his junk with the bass. So,
Yeah, that's an accurate description. My first thought for Nathan's role would be hype man. he's just, oh man, it's really too bad that he's not the front man. Because he's got the charisma, he's got the energy. Everyone loves Nathan. Like there was a stretch of time when Nathan was living in Austin, and you know, I'd walk around with him. I don't know, we'd either be running errands or like going to grab a beer somewhere. If it was supposed to take us 5 minutes to get to wherever we were going, it would always end up taking us 30 minutes because Nathan knew every single person that he passed walking through Austin. And every single one of those people wanted to stop and talk to Nathan and catch up and like just shoot the shit. And he's just one of those guys where, you know, everyone knows him, everyone loves him, and he's just a great, great hype man. He's a really good hugger. I don't know if too many people know that, but he's one of the best. He really is.
He does look like a big huggable teddy bear, so I feel like that's not shocking.
Yes. You know, there are some folks who give hugs and they might not mean it as much as Nathan means it. Nathan really, he puts his soul into every hug that he gives. And you can tell, you know you're getting a good hug.
We out here hating on fake hugging motherfuckers is what we're so like I'm not a hugger, but when I give one, I mean it. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
That's a different type of hugger. That's like,
that's I'm, totally I'm reserved with them. Respect that. Yeah,
but I have some friends who man, they when the bear hug comes out, you're like, that is something I'm actually like shockingly that I'm saying this, that I'm looking forward to more hugs this year. We will have hugs.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, me too, man. Me too. I feel like it's gonna be a real awkward transition period for me, because, you know, beforehand, my instinct is to just run up, hug, you know, get real intimate and close, and just tell my friends that I love them. And I guess I can still tell them that I love them. But I feel like there's going to be this stretch of time where, you know, you have to be considerate. Some people might not be totally ready to hug and to stand shoulder to shoulder. But I'm looking forward to it. I've really missed it, and I'm excited for that time to come.
I mean, we are under 3 months to standing shoulder to shoulder, sweaty as fuck.
We're getting real close. Yes,
we are almost there.
We're getting very
rub
close.
It in my face, Joe. Rub it in my face.
Yeah, sorry. So Oz here is really wants to go to the show, but maybe having a baby the day that we should say.
Oh my goodness, that's right.
Joke up an old soul at Sinclair. Is it September 3rd? I want to say this is
yes.
Off the top of my head. Yeah.
Yes. 3rd. Yeah. What's the due date? Is it like the first?
It is the first.
Those are different dates.
Okay. Yeah. Those are different days.
Yes. Okay. Okay. So, I mean, it's not 100% off the table, but again, I'm not sure how much your wife would maybe appreciate you.
I'm sure I know.
Jumping over.
Yeah. No, I think we all know how much she would appreciate that.
I mean, baby's going to go to their first show someday. Come on now.
Yes.
I mean, we just bought Jeff Rosenstock tickets. That, you know, that was the plan, but you know, that's not till late November. So.
Wait, did you buy the infant a ticket to that show, or are you just counting?
I assume it's like a plane ticket. Like I can just carry an infant in and it counts.
It's a carry-on.
Yeah, it's a carry-on. Yeah. Like that's
like, yeah. Hey kid, hold my stuff. I'm going into the pit. Stay with me.
I will have all like the backpack on. They'll just be behind me. They'll have little earplugs in.
Yeah. Oh, you're gonna go cans over the kid's ear. I tell you right now, because the kids can grow into the cans, no earplugs.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
dude, we fair. My wife and I had a daughter in January of last year. So right before everything went to shit, and we got her the cans, the headphone cans, because we were excited, super excited about the idea of bringing her to shows like, you know, like Winter Hill shows, you know, those chill, super fun matinee shows that are, maybe not as intense as a choke up show at O'Brien's. But we haven't gotten to use them yet. So pretty disappointed about that, but maybe we can break them out sometime soon.
Let's hope so. I want that fingers stuff crossed. To come back.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
We're getting there. My bank account's feeling it now. Every day I get an email being like, this person's show is bad. I'm like, oh my God, I have to go to all these things now.
Right. Yeah.
And I have to actually decide, because it usually would like play out in such a way where like, all right, see a couple of months, you know, add some Great Scott and impromptu O'Brien shows to kind of pad out the schedule.
Sure.
And then we're good. But yeah, it's going to be a hell of a fall for those of us who are enamored with live music. So it's going to be pretty exciting.
Yes. It's going to be pretty wild.
Yeah.
I feel like those first few shows are just going to be pretty nuts in the best way possible.
Yeah, same. Our friends at Once are doing some outdoor shows in Somerville soon. I think what will end up happening is the first ones that we end up going to are those, and we're going to really see what, you know, dip our toes in, as it were, to the experience. Yeah. So we shall see.
I genuinely look forward to my first O'Brien show that I can ride my bike to and get fucking hammered at. Just because I'm like, just because it's going to be built up. Like, I don't even love getting hammered anymore, but I'm just like, it's happening tonight.
Oh yeah, it's inevitable.
Coors Banquet beers and shots of whiskey. Let's go.
Shots of whiskey, man. Oz. That is a.
It's pent up rage. I need.
Yeah.
I feel like that's going to be a big moment for everyone. You know, their first show back at O'Brien's. I'm certainly looking forward to it. You know, I feel like a lot of people consider it a second home. And so.
Yeah.
Man. I can't wait.
I would say that it's also going to catch a lot of the emotional resonance of Great Scott being so close and kind of so tied to that venue.
Absolutely. I think
I'm going to pour some of my feelings for Great Scott into the next O'Brien show.
It's going to get emotional.
Yeah.
At least for me, it's going to get emotional.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in the course of doing a season of podcasts now, we've talked so much about O'Brien's and Great Scott. It's kind of hilarious. And like, but we're so excited to go back there. And everybody we talked to who's local is like, yes, that's what we need.
I mean, yeah, they're beacons, man. I'm not totally sure what is in Great Scott's future. I know they're working on something, but yeah, just to be able to get back to O'Brien's, it's going to be something else.
Sure is. I mean, those are the places to rehash it, but like places where weird
everybody take a shot. Sense. We're talking about
small
venues and how important they are.
Yes.
Weird venues and weird small places for weird art need to exist. And that
absolutely
that is something that coming out of this, like you mentioned walking through Alston a moment ago, and a question popped into my head and I want to answer it myself. And I want to hear both you guys answer it as somebody who has lived in Alston and has unreasonably lovely feelings for this little corner of Boston. If you were to draw the map of Alston in your mind and you know where you want to be and where you want to go and have a drink with some friends, or even if you're going to design a little evening of a couple places, I'd be curious where you get pulled. I mean, obviously we've talked about Great Scott and O'Brien's a lot, but other places, maybe not music venues, places in our little corner of the world that you're excited to return to, or even in a fantasy world, return to places.
Yes. No, that's a great question. Fantasy world, I would go back to another show at Great Scott. I feel really bummed out that I didn't, I'm not sure what my last show at Great Scott was. And I like a lot of people, I'm bummed that I didn't really get to savor that, you know what I mean? And so I think in a fantasy world, a great evening would include at least one final show at Great Scott. Of course, Obese is going to make the list. That goes without saying. I might grab dinner at Lee's. Really enjoy Lee's. I went there a bunch before some Obese shows. Also Azama. I mean, that place right across the street from O'Brien's.
Is that the place that always had shawarma wraps? That was like my post show. I've drank too much. I need a shawarma wrap place. Okay, yeah.
That is it's terrific. Yes, so good.
And the hot sauce. If you don't put your hot sauce in your roll-ups, you're a fucking idiot. It was so awesome.
You messed up. Yeah, no, absolutely. That place is terrific. I'm sure their food has saved me on more than a couple occasions. Yeah, I love that place. What else? I would probably start the day at Twin Donuts.
Ooh,
man.
Ooh.
Have not been there in a hot minute.
Classic place, yeah. Classic sign.
Yes.
Excellent donuts.
Great donuts. And their iced coffee. I don't know if you guys have had their iced coffee.
Oh, but yes.
Like, it's not normal iced coffee. It's just like, I don't know the exact recipe, but like they just pour regular hot coffee and then a shit ton of sugar and do some weird magic seance shit behind the counter. And they deliver you this concoction, this elixir that is unlike anything else. It's like malty and sweet and just beyond compare. And so I would probably start my Alston day there at Twin Donuts.
Wise.
I
have to say I had an evening in my youth trying to, well, we closed the bars in Alston, so it was 2, and we were like, all right, Twin Donuts opens at 4:30. Can we hang out here behind Deep Ellum and just take a quick nap and then get into that place?
Sure.
And the answer was no, we would just pass out and then we went home.
Oh man.
Someday I will complete that journey.
I had similar story once, unrelated, but it was in York, Maine, where they had a breakfast place that opened at 4 a.m. because that's when the fishermen came in. So they opened at 4 a.m. And so we were like at the beach drinking, and we just like, we could just sleep on the beach and wake up at 4 and go get breakfast. And we accomplished it. We saw it through, Joseph.
Good job, us.
Were you guys miserable? Because that sounds, I mean, I guess that sounds miserable as someone in their 30s, but
yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I was not in my 30s. You know,
we were 19, I think.
Okay, there you go. Then that sounds terrific.
Yeah.
I would shout to Deep Ellum as well for creating the fantasy list. I like Lone Star a lot. Deep Ellum was a fundamental craft beer stop in my mind when it came to the city.
I was
with the excellent beer.
100%.
I mean, I went there.
I was really going to say kind of the same thing. They introduced me to a lot of craft beer, you know, when I was just kind of figuring it out.
They were kind of instrumental to that. I mean, I went there twice during the pandemic, once to support the bar, and once when they announced they were closing to be like, all right, I'm going to have my last meal there. But like, fast going back to like 2019, I mean, I've been in craft beer for over a decade, and I would still go there and there'd be something on draft I'd never had or heard of. And like, you could trust Max to be like, here's why we're pouring this thing. And it would, you know, it wasn't like 100% of the time what they're pouring was the best tap list in town, but it was always something interesting, and they had a point of view and they expressed it. It wasn't just like, people for sure buy these kinds of things, so we sell these kinds of things. They're like, this is what we like, so this is what we do. So they really had that going for them. Still do as Lone Star. They're still, you know, still sure, still worth visiting. But
yeah,
I will miss that Buffalo.
I hear you, man.
Are they gonna keep a similar tap list at Lone Star? Not to, no idea. All right.
So I went to Lone Star in Cambridge, maybe a month or so ago, and it wasn't the biggest tap selection, I think it was largely lagers that they had on tap, which I thought was interesting. I of course got a house margarita and a Tecate, so I was
wise.
I was going to be happy either way.
Do you remember the Mexican Happy Meal from Deep Ellum?
Oh my goodness!
Oh,
wait, hold on! You have to remind me of this.
I believe it would send you back $10.
Yes.
And I believe $10 you would receive a 12-ounce can of Tecate, a shot of Blanco tequila, and their sangrita, like spicy red tomato thing. And this was their
Wait, I don't think I ever experienced this.
I do remember.
This sounds terrific though.
No, it was great. It was great. I would hope that survives onto the Lone Star menu. But as I'm talking about it, I'm like, I need to go back and actually eat at Lone Star. I think I've been strategically avoiding the Alston location because it's just going to make me sad that Deep Ellum is not there. But
I understand.
I will bite the bullet on my way to one of these shows this fall.
Yeah. No, I mean, I like I said, went to Lone Star recently. It was, I went with my wife, and it was our first time like going out and having someone else like put our baby down, like ever, I think. Yeah, ever. So it was a big occasion for us, and we had been like total hermits, totally isolated, hadn't gone anywhere, and so like this is a huge deal for us. It was a big moment, and it was great. We sat outside. The food was better than I had remembered. Like I said, I had my margarita and my Tecate. It was just a great time. And a friend of ours works there. He gave us some free cake. So it was a great time, man.
Two more great times.
Crap. Do I want burrito for dinner?
Hear that.
I think I want a burrito for dinner. I think.
I can't help you with that decision. You should always want a burrito for dinner.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
It won't hurt. This is usually, I think, right around the like 45 minute mark. We're like, hey, this is a beer podcast. We should talk about beer.
We were just talking a little beer.
We did. We did. I just finished a delicious beer that was a courtesy of you, Sam, a Guinness Baltimore Blonde. Can you tell us about the provenance of this beer?
Yeah. So, there's a long story. Maybe I can talk more about that later, but I'll
I mean, Dennis can edit this stuff, so you can just you can just dive in if you really want.
Okay, no, so I will. Okay, so Guinness Blonde was basically made by my sister-in-law. Her name is Holly Stevenson, and up until like literally 3 weeks ago, she was the head brewer at Guinness North America in Baltimore. She spent about 10 years in craft beer. She worked at Stone in San Diego. Then she moved to this place called Highland in Asheville, North Carolina. Spent a few years there. And then she was kind of just like recruited by Guinness. They hadn't yet opened this North America location in Baltimore, but they picked her up, and Holly was responsible for a lot of like the I mean, obviously, you know, Guinness is known for their stouts, and Holly was responsible for a lot of the creativity that went into, you know, producing some of their most recent beers that kind of diverged from that mold that I think a lot of people associate Guinness with. And so this is one of them. This is the Guinness Blonde. And I am admittedly a fairly boring beer drinker. I'm trying to be better. But for like a long time, I would just only ever get IPAs. But this sort of beer is, you know, I like this stuff more and more because it's not like the beer's trying to fight you, you know, it's just like easy to sip and it tastes good. And you can have a few of them without feeling like you're gonna, you know, pass out or drop to the floor. So love Holly, love her beer, love her contribution to the beer community, and love drinking that Guinness Blonde.
I guess I have to say, like, for IPAs, there's, and you say that I forget how did you just put it, that it you don't have to fight it, it doesn't fight you.
Right.
It's a good way to put it. Yes. I mean, the bitterness of an IPA is kind of the point, but it also like shouts at you in a sense, and it's very loud. And it's very direct to the point. Like we were about these.
Absolutely.
When you learn into like the language and lexicon of beer and start to try more and more styles, you get to like unpack and you're able to hear the story a beer is telling without it being like the most of a thing, you know, like it's not the biggest or the, and you know, this is a blonde ale. A blonde ale is never going to be the most of anything. It's always, you know, right. it's like a middle right. of the road style by definition.
Yes.
But that is a story. And there's like, I thought it was interesting that it had this kind of like Venice, like very like Kolsch, like note to it, like grapey, bright,
absolutely
lead character that I really found. I don't think I've actually, in the course of doing these podcasts, I usually will sip on something and get through. That's not true. We've gotten through two beers one time in 2 hours, but I am done with this Provence can, and we are, you know, 45 minutes in. Nice. So that's a good.
It's easy to drink, man.
It sure is. It's a good barometer of the quality of the beer, and it was really quite tasty. And this is, I think, the first Guinness America beer that I've had. So pretty cool. That whole story and the pictures of that brewery are fantastic. Did you get a chance to visit while she worked there?
Yes, I did. I was only able to visit one time, but it was great. Holly is an amazing tour guide, and she hooked us up with all the best beers that they had to offer. We got some merch, and we got to, you know, check out all the spots that were still under construction. It was definitely a cool spot. I really wish that I could have gone back before they moved. So Holly was at Guinness for a couple of years in Baltimore there, and just like 3 weeks ago, she moved. She's married to my sister, and the two of them moved to Portland, Oregon. A few weeks ago. Holly is she's no longer in craft beer. She has just made the transition to gin. Whoa. She's working at big changes. She is working for same parent company Diageo, but she's now working for Aviation.
Reynolds gin, is that not?
Yes,
Ryan Reynolds is your sister-in-law's boss. That's how we're gonna.
Technically, I will say this. Technically, my sister-in-law is Ryan Reynolds' boss.
Oh, even better.
she is the director of aviation. That's what it will say on her business card.
Oh, that's super cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know. A little sad that I didn't get to make that second trip out to Guinness, but pretty dang excited to make my way out to Portland and
for sure
see how the gin game is doing.
I was just going to make a comment about people in craft beer, present people included, love an artisan pouring, you know, every batch of beer into a wooden log and, like, you know, stirring it by hand. But like, if you want the truth, brands like Guinness, like, they always make great beer. Like, that's just what they do. And it's not as sexy to talk about, but it's true. And whenever they make like little styles like this, especially the tour experiences, like what they do on premise, is always the same experience as Carlsberg. Carlsberg is fine. But going to Carlsberg and seeing what they do and what they serve there, like, whoa, this is great. Dude.
Yes. No, 100%. A few years ago, when Holly was still working for Guinness in North America, my wife and I took a trip with my sister and my sister-in-law Holly, and we took my mom, and we all went to Ireland together, because my mom has family from there, and she had never been. And so we thought it would be, you know, just a great trip for her. So we all went to Ireland together. And, you know, since Holly was a Guinness employee, she got us this just insane backstage pass. Like, we got to see, you know, these historical Guinness items that are kept in like this temperature controlled room and handled by people with white gloves and things like that. And she also was able to hook us up with like this private tasting. So they have this like experimental part of the brewery, where they just kind of make what they feel like making. And so there's also this entire bar and tap room that's a part of this. And Holly managed to get us in before they opened. And so we had this entire tap room to ourselves, just the few of us sitting at the bar guy from Guinness just pouring us drinks left and right. I wish I could remember his name, because he was fucking rad. He actually lived in Cambridge, Central Square, for a while. But yeah, just an amazing experience. just getting to go backstage, get behind the scenes and taste some really awesome beers.
Was the experimental stuff like different styles, or were they just playing around with Guinness?
Oh, totally different styles. Nice. Yeah.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was really cool because a lot of the pubs that we went to in Ireland, there wasn't a ton of diversity on the beer menu. And a lot of that could have just been us, you know, not really knowing the best places to go. But at this Guinness tap room, man, they ran the gamut. They had a little bit of everything. So yeah, it was great.
It sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I guess on the other side of beer, why did you give us Abyssal Brothers to drink?
Yeah. Not a huge story behind that. I just really love Abyssal Brothers. I think Portland has some cool stuff going for it. I think Substance is really great. That Abyssal beer that I passed off to you, it came from a case of beer that my wife acquired for me for my birthday. That might've been like the biggest surprise ever. Just because, like, you know, Bissell's one of those places for us where, like, if you want Abyssal Brothers, like, you have to go get it. And, at the time, you know, we were still very much isolated. We were still very much just like staying home 24/7.
She was like, I just want to run out for a carton of milk. And then she goes to Portland for like an hour and a half. And
so what happened is Erin, my wife, Erin's mom, watches our daughter a couple days a week. And so apparently Erin's mom had to go to, she used to live in Portland. So, and she had to go there, I don't know, to like the city hall or something to pick up some sort of document. I don't totally remember what, but when Erin heard that her mom was taking this quick trip up to Portland, she was like, yo, Sam's birthday, you have to stop at Bissell and get him a case. And so like Monday morning rolls around, Erin's mom shows up to watch the baby. And she's like, hey, Sam, there's something heavy in my car. Can you go run out and grab it for me? Oh yeah, sure, no problem. And go out there and there's just like 24 16-ounce cans of Bissell Brothers beer, all different kinds too. And I was just like, you know, people have tried to surprise me in the past with stuff, and yeah, sometimes they get me, sometimes they don't. I was goddamn floored with this one.
Was it like a cheesy Christmas commercial and a little bow on top?
Dude, it might as well have, because like that's what my face looked like. That was my reaction. It was just like someone gave me a new car at Christmas with one of those big bows.
I love those commercials because like if your wife had like purchased a Lexus and didn't tell you, I'd be like,
dude, what, seriously,
what? We own what?
Right?
Why?
Yes.
But a case of beer, yeah, that's inappropriate.
We buying a car without telling your partner. I mean, people have student loans. You get a mortgage to pay off. You got to talk about that shit. But no, a case of beer, that was the perfect surprise. And I was over the moon. I've been savoring them, you know. I've been keeping some in the garage and slowly like moving them to the fridge. And I don't want them to run out. But now I've got all this new amazing beer that was delivered to my doorstep earlier today. So I guess I'm doing pretty good.
Well, that's very kind of you to part with a few cans, Sus. Thank you. Now that we understand where it came from, savor it even more.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, I know you guys are I know you guys appreciate good beer, so it was not hard to let go of.
Just tearing a little piece of them away. That's all. That's yeah. all we did.
Yeah, just wait till I just like, you know, decimate it on Untappd just for the sake of it. Too hoppy for me. Star.
This just IPA has too many place. Hops in it.
You turned to Mayor Quimby on that one there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that voice was, but
I think it was Mayor Quimby.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, all right, fine.
Pretty good.
I'll stick with
Boston
it.
Brahmin accent. Yeah, I mean that isn't like a whole other experience though. Like the experience of like going to a place and like having to go there to get a thing translates into how you feel about a beer. And it is something else we've like, kind of a callback we've talked about is like that. The thing that you connect to a place that leaves you with the warm feelings of that place. And when you see it again, it brings you there. Like you mentioned Portland earlier, I thought of Deschutes because I love Deschutes beer. And they're actually around most of the country. They just don't happen to be here in Massachusetts. And like they're Black Butte Porter. Every time I think of going out there, I'm like, I'm going to have a Black Butte Porter. It's going to be great.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Very exciting.
Yeah. No, there were those... Yeah, you definitely make those associations. And this, I don't know why I was not reminded of this earlier. But I, how do I say this briefly? Okay, so I started a new job a few months ago. It's like, I'm on this team called Strategy and Insights. It's for like a consumer research company. And as part of the onboarding process, each new starter has to complete their own personal project from start to finish on anything that interests them. And so I chose to do my personal project on Massachusetts craft beer and exploring, like, you know, how people talk about the beer, how people talk about, you know, the places where they enjoy the beer, the tap rooms, the beer gardens, things like that. So yeah, that was just like, that was kind of just an amazing period. They gave me a while to just work on this personal project, and I was able to just like, research craft beer in Massachusetts and like see what people liked about it and see what people liked about tap rooms and you know, all the different elements about the tap rooms. And it was just, that was a pretty great experience. Definitely one of the best onboarding experiences for a new job for me.
What'd you come away? What'd you find out? What's your final thesis here?
Final thesis. Well, I mean, a big part of it. A big part of it is just how much region and location factors into brand identity and like common affinities among both like the brewers and the beer drinkers who visit their breweries. It was just kind of cool to see because, you know, if I were to work on a different project for like, I don't know, if I looked at like athletic apparel, I would be getting something totally different. But when you're working with craft beer, so often it's hyper localized. And so much of the conversation is it's about the region. It's about where you're from. As so much of, you know, the origin stories are about where people are from. So much of what goes into the products is where you're from. One of the things that I talked about was the Trillium Treats, the Street series, you know. And just, I mean, I kind of, it's something that, you know, obviously that sort of thing plays into craft beer. But like, I guess I hadn't really considered how much or appreciated how much it actually does. And so that was really interesting to explore. And people are just like really proud about where they come from, and they're proud to have these amazing craft breweries like in their backyard. So it was a pretty interesting project.
Yeah, there was an initial.
Go ahead, Jeff.
There was a bubble of craft beer that kind of predates our heyday here in like the mid 90s. And at that point, it was just like Anytown USA plus IPA or like pale ale.
Oh yeah. You know? Yeah, absolutely.
And now, as you mentioned, we get the more hyper specific like Streets series.
Yes.
And we are a little bit more, because there's so many more breweries, people are not just like the name of their town. They're trying to think of something that's unique about what they're doing or where they are, and like keying into that a little bit with a little bit more acuity than I think back in the day, which is just like slap any name of any town.
Oh, totally.
Awesome.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. It's getting much more specific at times. I guess another Trillium one that comes to mind is, did you guys hear about the beer that they put out a couple years ago that they named Storoad?
I did see that. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, that was one that got a huge amount of engagement. You know, from the way that they introduced it, the artwork that they had on the can, just, you know, this hyper regional phenomenon. But it really resonated hugely, across their audience. So yeah, things like that, I thought were really interesting.
And Harpoon did it with their Alston Christmas beer too. So,
yes, know. Dude. Actually, dude, in my report, there is a photo of those two beers literally colliding. like, it was, someone had posted a picture of like the Trillium Storoad beer colliding with the Alston Christmas beer.
Well, yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I only buy locally made basketball shorts. So that's the way that, you know, I keep it local here.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to be a cynic. I have been accused of being such before. I mean, we as brewers are assembling ingredients from around the world to make these things in these places. But most of us, like, on the Jack's Abbey side, for us in particular, we're specifically buying like malt from Germany that is like malted for us.
Sure.
For our Oktoberfest. Thinking of that now, because that currently sits in like a huge swath of our brewery. It's like all of these, what we call super sacks of huge things ready to be malted into a Copper Legend. And I think about that when I see it, because I'm like, you know, everybody wants local, everybody wants that thing that is near them or speaks to their specific place.
Sure.
At the same time, all brewers are forced to do this just because, you know, you can't buy all grain from New England. You can buy grain from New England that's malted right here. You can't make enough beer to sell with it. There just isn't enough of it. There's not enough grain grown here to you know, support a brewery, certainly of our size or of Trillium size. So it's funny to think about it that way, because it is this like, this interesting relationship between how we express ourselves and then what we're actually doing. And then
absolutely,
I think that can be, it can be kind of disillusioning being on the inside of it, I think, because I look at them like, oh, everyone's talking about how, you know, trying to speak to their consumers in the language of us who are here, but we're trying from tradition that's around the world, that's hundreds of years old, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
So it's funny to look at that difference between how we talk about it versus the thing that we're doing.
Yeah. And I mean, and there are totally, you know, folks who not only, you know, they don't shy away from where their ingredients come from, but they kind of celebrate it, which I think is totally great. 'Cause what, you know, things like Galaxy Hops. What is that? That's like Australian, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. 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 So I think there's a very cool balance between celebrating your roots and celebrating where you're from, and also being able to celebrate, you know, these ingredients that you use from around the world. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, like ingredients and process. I think that's just something I think honestly, if we were talking about work, we would be talking about how we struggle to talk about like the process that Jacksabby undergoes to make our beer. Because it's kind of complicated and hard to explain for people. And the end result is a thing that's really well balanced, crisp, delicious. And is that well balanced, and speaking earlier to what we were talking about, Baltimore Blonde, it's not the most of anything. You know, it's just the right harmony between these elements that
the process
expresses. So, I mean, I do think, you know, I don't, I'm going to force a metaphor here because that is another thing that I like to do. I think I was listening to the album that Level is on.
Stormy Blue. Yeah.
Stormy Blue today. And I was thinking about listening to your solo record, and I was like, yeah, this album has this element that you were talking about earlier of these different parts of your personality that are kind of converging.
Sure.
And then you have like the penultimate song being like kind of a stripped down thing into like a kick-ass final song on it. I mean, I think that does speak to that kind of balance that we're talking about. And that is, I think, the grist of our, another beer pun for y'all, of our podcast, connecting beer and music.
That's beautiful, man.
Yeah, see, but that wasn't a question. That's the problem, Sam. I can talk.
No.
Way to wrap up the podcast for us.
Now we're done.
That was outstanding. I'm really impressed, man. You really just pulled that all together.
Well, that's the job.
So
that's why I get paid the no bucks.
Goosebumps.
If we're gonna tie it back a little bit to Choke Up, you got back together. You're playing a show. You obviously took some time off. I assume it was because you were having a baby after your run of shows in two Septembers ago now. Holy fuck.
Yeah.
I know, right? You guys gonna be releasing new stuff at some point? Obviously no timeline, because the world's fucking still slowly rolling back, but
yeah. No, great question. So before my wife and I had our baby, before the pandemic, the boys and I, we put together, I think it was maybe 9 songs of new material that we were, we were planning on putting towards LP3. That's still the plan. But with everything going on, we haven't, the four of us have not been in a room together in a long time. So it's gonna take a while before LP3 sees the light of day. I hope not as long as my solo record took to see the light of day. But yeah, there's we're just gonna have to, you know, shake the cobwebs off and dive back into it. And I'm looking forward to it though, you know. Yeah, it's been a while since we've played together, and you know, band practices used to be one of my, it was like my favorite day of the week, you know, like a Tuesday after work, just driving straight to the practice space, having a couple beers, playing some songs with my best friends. That was really just, you know, a highlight for me, and I'm really, really looking forward to that becoming a regular thing again. And so, yeah, we got stuff in the works. May take a little bit of time, but yeah, it'll get there at some point.
I think you have some inadvertent insight into your creative process there too. You have a show at the Sinclair on September 3rd.
Yes.
It is currently mid-June. So you're ready to just walk back into a room with your best friends and, you know, relearn all your songs quickly.
I will say I am absolutely terrified.
That creative process though, is you put a date on the calendar and you're like, well, we yes. have to do this.
So yes. We'll figure no, it out. I'm literally, once I get off the line with you guys, I'm hitting up the boys and I'm saying, let's put something on the books. Let's get back together again.
I think we've established that it's Harley's job. So
shit, you're right. You know what? I did get a missed call from Harley the other day. He was probably reaching out about scheduling band practice. So I messed up again.
You know, I fully understand the like band practice thing. Me and Joe's band that we started during the pandemic practiced last night. Yeah. And I think I just like got super loose and just let everything fly. And it felt fucking fantastic. I was just screaming at the top of my lungs and it felt so good.
Those are the best sessions, and fuck, I am looking forward to it.
I am looking forward to seeing Choke Up again.
Hell yeah!
So
for the first time for me,
well, if I get to,
yes, that's but, right. Yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
know, you and better you know, play we'll, another fucking show later on because I want to at least. You know.
we'll give a shout out to your new baby at the show if you aren't able to make it.
Appreciate it. I'll text you the name so you'll at least know. All right, you can shout out the
that's
name.
That's perfect.
I'm not going to announce it on the podcast, so.
Do you know what it is already?
We're like, you know, it's like one of those things. We're like 99% sure. If it comes out Ooh. And it doesn't look like the name, we're going to be like, we're going to call an audible. But as long as it looks like that name to us.
Dude, it was the same for us. We had a name in our back pocket for years. And then, you know, we thought, you know, we got to make a list, you know, we got to put in the effort. So we made a list, but that name that had been in our back pocket was the one that was the one that we went with.
What did you go with? Yours has come out. So we, you know.
Yes. Her name is June.
Okay.
I honestly, it's been so long. I don't know 100% what inspired it, if anything inspired it. I think a possible answer might be June Carter Cash.
Good answer.
That might have been the inspiration.
You can cite it as an inspiration.
Yeah. So, yes. Okay. Yeah, let's do that. Absolutely. Let's do that. June Carter. Yes.
Fantastic.
But no, that was one of those. It was one of those where like 99% sure we're going to go with that, but you know, let's wait until we see her, spend a little bit of time with her and make sure it fits. And it did. We love it now. Glad we stuck with it.
Well, I can't think of a better way to end this than that. So that was perfect. Right on. Joe, dude, we missed anything on our list of questions we didn't make up this week because we're idiots.
Don't give away the trade secrets, man. Come on. I mean, the best part of this pod for me is getting to, you know, the doing the audio research and listening back. So I have to say, listening through the discography again this week, Stormy Blue just kind of hit me. And in fact, I ended that album as I walked in the door and sat down. And man, what a good. I mean, someday I want to talk to you about the story that you're trying to tell there, or you are telling that I'm trying to hear, but we'll have to save that for a future day. I think it's an excellent record.
Absolutely. And
I think your solo record, well, I'm really excited to put it on the platter this fall.
Hell yes.
Very excited. Hell
yes. Thanks so much, man. Yeah. Yeah. It's coming out. I'll keep you posted. It'll see the light of day.
Cool.
I did try to find the Ryan the Terrible tape that you guys put out that I have somewhere in this yes. house, but I have no idea where it is.
Dude, I've got to move it because like I have it on like my record shelf that is the perfect height for my daughter to reach. And so like she just goes for it and just like takes tape out, you know, starts ripping at the liner notes. And so I gotta find a better place to store that. But yeah. Love that old purple RTT tape.
Yeah. We may have played a show together when I bought that tape, like whenever long ago that was at PA's Lounge, I think. But I honestly,
yeah.
Like, I don't know if I just saw you at PA's or I played a show, like, cause you know, Ryan was booking PAs then, so I feel like I played it a thousand times.
That must have been like a decade ago.
So long ago.
Damn, that's wild.
Well, seriously, this was great. Thank you for coming on, man.
Dude, thank you guys so much for having me. It was a pleasure officially meeting you guys. It was a pleasure speaking with you. So, and you know, thanks so much again for the beer drop off. That is such a treat for me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for doing what you do, man.
Yeah, thanks for taking an hour and a half to talk to us, and for also making a handful of records that I fucking personally love.
So. Just glad to be clear, he said he fucking personally loves, not fuck and personally love.
Would be
inappropriate. We don't condone that. It's an adverb situation. You got to be clear with your usage again.
You got to be careful.
Yeah, there's
careful
punctuation that you can't fully hear.
That's right.
Yes.
My blue.